U.S. President John F. Kennedy once said, "Mankind must put an end to war, or war will put an end to mankind."
Dr. Mahathir bin Mohamad is the former Malaysian Prime Minister and founder of the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to criminalise war.
Slavery, like war, was once considered legitimate. It took the human community centuries to abolish slavery. It may take an equally long time to criminalise war, but the first steps must be taken now if we wish to abolish war as a means of settling conflicts between nations. We must persist.
The foundation was established 5 years ago and held its first tribunal last year. At a four-day hearing in Kuala Lumpur, the charge of crimes against peace was levelled at Bush and Blair for the invasion of Iraq, instigated on the back of false information from the intelligence agencies. Both former leaders, Bush and Blair, were found guilty of breaching the United Nations Charter and international law. Although the foundation does not have the power to enforce its judgments, it has notified the international criminal courts of its findings, vain hope that it may one day trigger a full-blown trial. My name is Lauren Booth. I'm a human rights activist and broadcaster. I came to Kuala Lumpur to see if, even nominally, those who led the former Bush regime, and who The Hague so far won't touch, can be made to answer for the torture of civilians in Iraq, Afghanistan, Guantanamo Bay. The foundation are holding their second tribunal, and I intend to watch every moment. I spoke to Avtaran Singh, one of the lawyers for the prosecution, about why this tribunal is needed and why The Hague, in so many ways, is no longer fulfilling its duty as the world's court.
I mean, they have to let them get away with it, admittedly. You have to have someone to take the criminal to court, and they're not doing that.
But that's the whole point. That's where you find that, when countries turn rogue in terms of not following laws, like what the United States is doing, but what happens is that that's when you have the international community to step in and say, let's play by the rules. But when the community also fails you, the United Nations fails you, the ICC fails you, then what do you do? So which is why in the end of the day, there is a serious breakdown internationally on the application of basic justice. A lot of people here, I would share with you, are also questioning that why are we doing this in Malaysia? There's a lot of that kind of question.
Why are we doing what?
Why are we doing this tribunal in Malaysia? We are not affected. But that's the whole problem. You see, everybody is affected, whether you realize it or not. Because injustice is injustice.
This tribunal seeks to try various members of the Bush administration for facilitating torture and war crimes. The accused are former President George Bush, his Vice President Dick Cheney, and former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Their advisors, Alberto Gonzalez, David Addington, and William Haynes, are the co-accused, being tried here for helping the politicians put their plans into action. And lastly, Jay Bybee and John Yoo, lawyers in the Attorney General's office, those who gave legal advice on torture to the politicians. They're accused of manipulating information to fit prepared plans. Now, you won't see any of these eight faces again in this program, because unsurprisingly, none of the eight accused attended the tribunal. The foundation had to appoint a legal team to make the case on their behalf. The first few days of the tribunal heard the three witnesses for the prosecution outline in great detail their suffering at the hands of soldiers and agents acting for the US Armed Forces.
And around me there were more than 10 persons. Each person was carrying a tool for torture, like metal parts or wood, maybe sticks, and some cables, and some metal chains, and some rubber cables. And each person of these 10 were active participating in the torture of Abbas. And they would hit him in every part of his body.
اللي سمعته يعني وشاهدته على شاشات التلفزيون عن أبو غريب نقطة في بحر على ما شاهدته أنا يعني المحجر كان مقابل حمام التعذيب لأن كانت الشرطية اللي تعذبني تضع الصوندة إحنا نسميها في العراق ما أعرف أنتوا شو تسموها وتضع بها خشبة يعني عودة خشبية وعندما تبدأ بالتعذيب كان جسمي مشبع بالماء البارد تبدي بالضرب لعدة ساعات متقصدة لكل السجناء منطقة الظهر ومنطقة الرقبة.
Inexplicably, after 6 months, Jamila was released from custody without any charge. She had been abducted from her home, beaten and abused alongside her daughter and nephew for no clear reason.
In Bagram, I remained for 11 months. I was intensely interrogated for a month in solitary confinement by the CIA, by the FBI and US military intelligence and also by British intelligence. There are interrogators who speak of the Bagram detention facility and the death of a particular taxi driver whose name was Dilawar. I used to see Dilawar in my cell. His back was towards me and he was chained to the top of the door with his hands above his head like so and a hood placed above it. And on an occasion when his body had slumped from being hung up there for several days, the guards opened the door and instead of administering to him the medical treatment that he required, they began to punch him repeatedly and then they dragged his body away. What I learned later is that this man died in American custody and he was one of two deaths that I witnessed with my own eyes in Bagram.
The torture that these three suffered was bad enough at the time. Their psychological pain continues. And Jamila, in particular, still struggles with the physical repercussions of the torture. Damage was done to her back, her feet, and her arms.
نعم لحد الآن طبعاً عرضت في دمشق على عدة جهات طبية. الكل أجمع على إجراء عملية إلى ظهري وإجراء عملية في الرقبة. رفضت إجراء العملية يمكن أن أتعرض إلى الشلل. آخر الأطباء والتقارير موجودة معني قررت أنه أسافر إلى فرنسا هناك أجهزة للعلاج لكن لا أستطيع السفر نظرا لقصر الإمكانيات المادية الآن أنا أرتدي يعني مع الأسف هذه الأحذية الطبية اللي مفتوحة من كل الجوانب حتى في الشتاء أما في فصل الشتاء لا أستطيع النوم إلا بالمسكنات.
These three witnesses gave many hours of harrowing evidence of beatings, humiliation, of psychological torture. What you've seen here, that's only a small sample of their testimony. The defense also had the opportunity to cross-examine the witnesses. With the prosecution putting forward such a strong case, The defense team were often reduced to presenting unseemly and unconvincing legal stunts.
The people who beat you, the people who threw you from wall to wall, the people who hit you until the plastic went into your leg, feet, if they were in this chair, handcuffed, shackled, legs shackled, and no one else was in this room except you and that person, and you had a stick, what would you do to him or her?
Your Honor, I object to this line of questioning. It's purely hypothetical, speculative, and encouraging this victim of war crimes and a crime against humanity to admit that she herself might commit a crime. This is preposterous, badgering the witness in this way and trying to entrap her into admitting that under certain hypothetical circumstances she might commit a crime. So I object to this line of questioning.
Is the objection sustained? Very well.
Travelling back to the hotel for the night, my thoughts dwell on the three torture victims. For them, this is the only way they can seek justice against the might of the American government and forces. This is the only forum that will even hear their case. The weight of tens of thousands of unheard testimonies is on my mind. For the victims here, it's a victory just to have their experience and their pain discussed in public. On the fourth day, with all the evidence submitted, the witnesses' legal teams summed up the arguments and made their closing remarks.
The entire video contains various hearsay allegations.
Prosecutor Boyle set about showing that even if you leave aside international law, the US's own military law and guidelines states that politicians are accountable for the war crimes of their soldiers.
Bush Cheney Rumsfeld is also responsible if he has actual knowledge, and in this case they had actual knowledge, or should have knowledge, through reports received by him or through other means, that troops or other persons subject to his control are about to commit or have committed a war crime, and he fails to take the necessary and reasonable steps to ensure compliance with the law of war or to punish violators thereof. Now that's their own field manual.
The defense team struggled to match the prosecution's detailed work and instead opted for ever grander sweeping claims and, yes, more theatrics.
Let's get back to the assertion made. Torture is okay after 9/11. Torture is okay after the war on terror. The world has changed. International law has changed. For the better or for the worse, it doesn't matter. The legal point is, it has changed. And we remember places like Gettysburg and Dunkirk. There is a fixed place with a fixed uniform army. The laws of war that the prosecution has so thoroughly explained to us yesterday works. Yes, for those wars, for those situations. International law changes after wars. That's our point. And after the war on terror, after 9/11, yeah, we say torture is okay.
Professor Paust affirms in this lengthy article with citations that I will not review here that even after 9/11, the prohibition on torture remains absolute. And let me point out, even during the darkest days of the Vietnam War, when Professor Paus was investigating war crimes allegations, no one in the United States government argued any right to torture anyone. So there was no excuse for what was done to anyone after 9/11, and that still remains the official position of the United States government today, and especially the United States military.
By this point, it was easy for even a layman to see that the defense's tactics were weak, that the prosecution was brushing aside their arguments with ease. At the end of the legal arguments, I caught up with Francis Boyle of the prosecution. I asked him why members of the U.S. Armed Forces didn't resist the addition of torture methods to their duties.
But then how in the American Constitution, I'm not very bright in these areas, how in the American Constitution did Bush manage to, and Rumsfeld manage to get this chain of command changed? Why didn't anybody go, sir? Why didn't any commander come to him? How did that happen?
No guts. No principles. Both Staff Sergeant Camilo Mejia, Staff Sergeant, and First Lieutenant Aaron Latata had read Field Manual 2710, and they knew what was going on was wrong, and it was illegal and criminal and war crimes, and they were being asked to participate in the commission of war crimes, and they refused, and they were right, which is why I helped defend them free of charge. But to the best of my knowledge, they're the only two individuals here in United States Armed Forces who said, no, I will not do this. So it raises serious questions as to the training of U.S. Armed Forces from the top to the bottom.
The defense was keen to defend the emotive approach they took to the tribunal as necessary, in order to balance out the emotional impact of the prosecution's evidence.
Emotions are running high in the courtroom. You can feel it from the participants, people around here. And yes, I understand their anger. Yes, I understand their hurt and their desperate. They feel that they have not been hurt and they feel that they have nowhere else to turn to. Fine, I understand it. But at the same time, they must also understand that this is not a kangaroo court. You don't just expect the eight accused to lie down and, you know, guilty verdict. Of course, the eight accused are not here. So, in their place, or should I say, as a friend of the court, I could put forward the points that may have been missed or the points against the prosecution's case, but to show that there is also emotion on the other side.
Journalists covering the occasion were keen to ask me about my relationship with my brother-in-law, Tony Blair, and his prosecution in the tribunal's previous sitting.
How do you feel one of your family members, Tony Blair, is at least as a war criminal?
As a Muslim, I make du'a that Tony Blair will come to Islam. His sister-in-law, I regret that he is a war criminal and that he's committed these crimes. And like any war criminal, he should be brought to greater justice.
I was keen to hear the perspective of the Malaysian journalists who covered the tribunal.
And what moved you most about...
Well, what did you learn that you didn't know?
Well, I guess I have read about these tortures and everything, but actually to have a real witness telling you what happened to them, of all these objects inserted, of people being raped and how they were deprived of food and light and stuff, it makes you feel it more and, you know, understand it better.
This is, I think, the only logical verdict after the huge amount of massive evidence that's been presented. Not on a personal level, but on a level of leaders. These people were tasked with leading the world, they were tasked with making it safe, and they've made it the most unsafe place for decades now. these people should be not only convicted in this court, but in the court of history.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have heard the evidence, and we are unanimous that all accused, first I would say we are unanimous in our finding on the circuit in respect of the evidence. The prosecution has proved its case beyond reasonable doubt, and we therefore have found all the accused guilty as charged.
After the verdict, the prosecution team, along with two of the torture victims, held a press conference. They sought to emphasize the significance of their victory and send out a message that they will continue to pursue war criminals no matter what nation they call home.
واليوم انا فرحانة جدا يغمرني الفرح والسعادة انه تصدر المحكمة هذا القرار حتى لو هو معنوي كبير جدا بالنسبة لنا. فانا اقف اجلال واكرام الى الدكتور مهاتير وزوجته والعاملين معه لان هم الدوله الوحيده اللي اثارت هذه القضيه.
Question for Jamila and Mozam and yourself. What sort of the Nazi camps were an end solution for the fascists. They wanted extermination of the peoples they rounded up. What has been the agenda of setting up these anyway, and has it been met?
It's not to get information. They know it won't produce information. It's to terrorize and intimidate anyone who stands in their way anywhere in the world, including in the United States itself.
أحد الأطفال من سوريا كان زائر العراق وجابه أنت مساعد ابن لادن. كتل وتعذيب ما تتصوري بعدين قال نعم هذا الطفل من القتل يوقفون القتل فأنا سألته قلت له ليش ابني يعني أنت اتهمت نفسك هذه التهمة قال خلا حتى يوقف القتل لأن يعني بعد ما تحمل التعذيب طفل 16 سنة
The question on everyone's lips of course must be what happens now. This tribunal has no power of enforcement. It can only inform more powerful bodies of its verdict and hope they act upon it.
We have to now begin to indict the present-day war criminals who are continuing and perpetuating this policy. It's a war crime. Nobody is above the law. And therefore, people have got to start reacting.
I would suggest clearly that people don't close their eyes to the crimes that are being taken, that are taking place right now. The reinstitution of the Guantanamo Military Commission's process is in itself a stamp of approval by Obama for Guantanamo, the place that he said in the beginning when he came into power that he will close it within a year. And yet he has given it its approval and it continues to run.
I caught up with Avtara Singh one last time. I wanted to find out if President Obama could be just as vulnerable, in principle at least, to prosecution as his predecessor, George W. Bush.
But I'm just really trying to get to the nub here because I'm not a legal mind of how culpable Obama is. So his argument, if say this is a year on, a tribunal, he's no longer in power, and we say, you sat over the Guantanamo Bay. 169 people were still in these terrible conditions.
Right.
He'd say, but the statutes, the decision's already been made, I was just sitting. But actually, as we've heard in this tribunal, no, you have to take positive action to end the suffering, or you're culpable.
Correct. That is true. Yeah. That is true. Because I think at the end of the day, like I said, he's number one perpetuating the offense. So when you're perpetuating the offense, you are also exposing yourself to liability. So on that score, I think the short answer would be that he is breaching international law.
All that the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to Criminalise War can do is to supply the International Criminal Court and other sovereign states with the evidence and the judgments formed here, in the hope, the outside hope, that one may decide to use the case built here to pursue a full prosecution against George Bush and his coterie of advisers. That said, the Foundation's aim is actually much larger than merely pursuing individual cases. Their ultimate point is to convince the international general public that war in itself is a crime whose effects on men, women and children simply cannot be accepted. When that happens, world leaders, however powerful, may finally be answerable for their crimes against humanity.